Welcome to the Wealth Steading Podcast. This is episode 40. It's October 31st, 2014. Happy Halloween. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager of InvestableWealth.com. Today, this episode is going to focus on an answer to your questions about how am I playing this trend? What stocks am I invested in to take advantage of this uptrend? Well, that's what I'm going to dedicate this episode to. But before I get started, I did want to make you aware of my recent appearance on the Money SOS podcast. If you're not familiar with the Money SOS podcast, and that podcast is run by Steve Stewart, he does a really good job over there, particularly with people that are working on saving baby steps. If you're familiar with the Dave Ramsey process and you need some help in that area, you probably want to go over and give Steve's podcast a listen. Steve is dedicated to helping people get out of debt and increase their savings rate. He's truly a disciple of the Dave Ramsey method. So look him up on Stitcher or iTunes. And specifically, if you want to hear my interview, it was episode 168. I'll have a link to that in the show notes for this episode. Steve had me on to discuss my thoughts on saving and my strategies and really what it was over the last 30 years that got me to my position in life today. Now, we didn't talk about stock trading or any of that kind of investing stuff because that's not the emphasis of his show. But we did get down and talk about the nuts and bolts and really the psychology about savings. You know, some of the decisions, some of the key decisions I made, those little incremental daily decisions that I made over the last 30 years that have given me the lifestyle that I have to lead today. And like following a diet, it sounds easy on paper, but it's much harder to live out in real life. Yeah, if you're interested in my background, have a listen to Steve's podcast. You can hear me describe the ugly old blue station wagon that I drove. It was one of those ones that had the fake wood paneling on it. Drove that thing for about 4 or 5 years, and I hated it. But I did that to save money, to build my wealth, to build my nest egg. And you know what? The life I'm leading now, it was well worth making that sacrifice. So that's the Money Plan SOS podcast, episode 168. The link will be in the show notes for this episode. But let's drill down and talk about what I'm invested in right now and how I'm playing this current uptrend. I'm going to tell you broadly what I'm invested in. And if you do a little bit of homework, it probably wouldn't be hard for you to figure out the precise positions. But in this podcast, I'm not going to actually name names, okay? I'm going to keep it at a high level, but certainly enough of a level where you can understand where I'm coming from. So first off, for those of you that may not be aware or haven't been paying attention, the market, the indexes are definitely in a market uptrend. We hit a low about 2 weeks ago. That was on October 15th. Now, of course, none of us could have known it was a low. And so what I described on this podcast, and if you haven't heard those episodes, go back and listen to a few from that date range. You'll hear me talking through the thought process. Now, since we don't know specifically when there is going to be a market low, we have to watch for signals from the general market, from what the pension funds and the smart money and the institutional buyers, are they getting in or getting out of the market? Well, they were all getting out of the market up to October 15th. That had been going on for about a month or so, maybe even 6 weeks. The S&P 500 had come down around 10%, but then on that point, October 15th, it started moving back up. And we waited 4 days for what's called a follow-through day. We waited for 4 days, four decisive days when the market was going up, when it was in an attempted rally. A rally is when the market moves in an upward direction, an uptrend. So we waited to the fourth day, and when we saw the S&P 500 break out above its 200-day moving average, it was up, 1%, 1.5% that day. It was up in significantly above average trading volume for that day. That was all a sign to us that it looked like that the correction was over, that that low day truly was on October 15th, and that it was time to move into the market. So what I'm going to talk to you about now is the positions that I took on that particular day when we had a follow-through day, and that would have been October 21st. Now I'm going to talk to you about five specific positions or five specific groups that I'm invested in. And one of those groups I was actually invested in prior to that October 21st follow-through day. Now, this is an asset class that I actually have a considerable amount of my money in, and it's been more of a safety play or a risk minimization play overall, and that's the U.S. dollar. Now, I'm not going to tell you specifically what I'm invested in to mimic the U.S. dollar or take advantage of the rise in the U.S. dollar. Now, as I say, I've had this position prior to this most recent uptrend because I've been a believer in the U.S. dollar all year. And I believe in that because of the charts and because of the research I've done, but I also believe in it because down deep inside, I'm a contrarian. And when everybody else writes something off, it makes me want to wonder, where's the value? Is there really something there? If all these people are saying it's that bad, maybe it's really not that bad. And that's where we got with the U.S. dollar this year. There'd been so much criticism of it, so many people worried that the dollar was going to collapse, that we were going to lose our status as the world reserve currency, that the petrodollar was going to go away, all these different things. I didn't believe that was the case, but more importantly, as I watched the charts on it, I saw that the dollar was pretty much stable within a certain trading range. And I didn't think it would break below that trading range, and I had high hopes that it could get above it. And so, rather than have my money sitting in cash, sitting in a money market, where it wasn't making any interest, I looked at that US dollar trading range and I said, you know, this is a risk. Every position is a risk. By investing in the US dollar, if it stays in its trading range, I can see where possibly I could lose 1%, 2%, 3%. I could definitely lose that kind of a value if it stays within these trading ranges, if it stays within the support that it seems to have had, long-term support. On the other hand, as an alternative, because when we invest, we're always looking at alternatives, there's always trade-offs. There's always opportunity costs. If I didn't remain in a money market where I wasn't making any money, and if I didn't invest in the US dollar where I had this risk where possibly I could lose 1, 2, 3%, well, then I could, say, invest in the S&P 500, you know, the broad index. And the problem with that was, when I looked at its trading range, I could easily see a scenario where it could drop significantly, 10, 15, 20, 25%. And that's why I chose to move into the US dollar, because I saw, like I say, a 2, 3% downside, but really overall stability. And when I contrasted that against the general market where I saw, hey, maybe a 25% drawdown, well, that's why I chose to go into the dollar. And I went into it in a pretty big way. Well, the dollar has held steady most of the year. It reached its lowest point, I think, sometime in May. And then really, though, pretty much since the summer, it went straight up. And again, the dollar is fairly stable, so we're not talking about major increases here. But let's just say from the summertime frame to the fall, from its lowest point to its highest point, the dollar went up, you know, peak to trough, about 7%. Now, that was a big upward move because it did get out of that small little trading range that I was speculating that it would get out of. You know, maybe it's going to fluctuate, go down 1% or so. Possibly it could go down 2 or 3%, but it could also break out of that range. And it did that. It went up 7%. Again, peak to trough. But like all things do, they don't go up forever. And when the market started going down, the dollar went down as well. So in early September, when we started to see a market correction, the dollar dropped about 2%. But I hung in there. I didn't sell. Again, because of what I was looking at in the charts, I felt that it had support. And so that's why I held my dollar position through the downtrend when I was not in any other stocks or index funds or anything like that. And that downtrend in the S&P 500 went from about the middle of September all the way up until October 15th, like we talked about. So in that time, when the S&P dropped around 10%, the dollar only dropped around 2%, and then since then, they've both recovered. So I remain strongly in the dollar, and although it's not making huge returns, remember, I was just trying to beat these depressed interest rates that we're currently seeing in money market and in bank accounts. So really what I was trying to do was just try, and stay ahead of inflation to see how much of an increase I could get over inflation. This was more of a capital preservation strategy than an actual growth strategy. But there you have it. Of my five positions, one of them is the US dollar. Now, once that follow-through day came on October 15th and I did jump back into the market, let me tell you about those other four positions that I took. And if you've been listening to this podcast or you follow my blog, you know that the overall near and short-term trend that I see and that I've been forecasting is that we were going to have a stronger rising dollar. Obviously, that's why I was in the dollar. That would have consequences. That may hurt some of the big multinational companies, some of the big exporters, or some of the large companies that derive a lot of their income from operations that they have overseas, and so they would be exposed to exchange rate fluctuations. So that was a trend I was looking at. I was also seeing the price of oil come down. Brent crude came down from like 120 down to in the mid-80s. West Texas Intermediate was, I don't know, $107, $110, $111, somewhere in that range. Came all the way down into the low $80 per barrel. So we're seeing declining petroleum, lots of oil surplus. Well, that tells me it's going to favor things like consumer products, consumer spending. The money that Americans save at the gas tank, they're going to spend on consumer products. At the same time, though, the big driving force in our economy in the last 5 years or so, at least 4 years for sure, have been these petroleum companies, particularly these fracking companies. If you look at all the job growth, and then not only the job growth, but the states that had the most increase in income, it was all related around the oil drillers, Louisiana, Texas, North Dakota, the people that were experiencing the horizontal drilling and fracking revolution, this energy boom. Well, that economy obviously is going to suffer, and I don't think it's going to go out of business. If you listen to my previous podcast about gold dropping down to $900, that's where I talk about how that's related to the price of oil and how I see our even our U.S. production being efficient enough to be able to weather a storm of maybe getting down to even, you know, $60, $70 a barrel for oil. But in any case, it is going to hurt that industry to some extent. And since that's where a lot of the job growth was coming from and a lot of the increase in wages, you know, that's going to have a counter effect. So that part of the economy is going to go down. So for the average Joe's six-pack consumer that is spending under $3 a gallon for gasoline when before he was spending $4.75, he has more money to spend. So that's going to help that sector of the economy. So those are things I'm looking at as I look at us going into this uptrend. I'm not simply saying, hey, the market's going into a rally, I'm going to buy it. I was saying the market's going into a rally. What areas can I focus on that I think will get me at least average or, you know, above average return? So those are some of the trends. And when you extend out that lower cost in petroleum and gas and diesel things, that obviously takes you into the transportations. You can think that people that run anything that uses energy, trains, aircraft, diesel trucks, you know, trucking companies, rental car companies, Hertz, all those guys. I mean, anybody that's tied to gasoline, if the price of gasoline and the price of diesel goes down, that means there's going to be more miles driven. So there'll be more tires sold because they'll wear out quicker, or, you know, Midas mufflers or brakes or whatever. I guess nobody even gets a muffler replaced anymore, but your brakes, they wear out the more miles you drive. So as the cost of gasoline goes down or the cost of diesel goes down, those things will be consumed more. Trucking companies, shipping companies, freight companies, airlines. If the cost of their fuel goes down, the companies will make more money. They'll also pass some of that on to customers. So customers will fly more or will drive more miles or will rent more trucks, you know, ship more product. So again, that's an area of the economy that I thought could do well, at least in the short and near term, right? I'm not projecting this out 20 years. I'm just saying over the next 6 weeks, 6 months, that's what I'm looking at. So this is how I'm formulating my trading strategy. Another area I looked at was the global slowdown, and this does relate back to the strength of the overall dollar. Won't get into it today, but as I looked around the world, I saw these other economies slowing down. I saw our economy cutting back on quantitative easing. I saw our government spending a little bit less, not much, but a little bit less, and then the Federal Reserve printing a little less money. Now, they still have a lot to play with on their balance sheet, but overall, we were kind of reducing, tightening our belt a little bit on monetary supply. So I thought that would keep interest rates stable to possibly rising. So that's again why I thought the US dollar would be stable, and particularly when I looked at economies like Japan or Europe or China, where they're continuing to inflate. Now they didn't necessarily inflate as much as we did in the beginning, but they're starting to make up for it now. So that's why I thought the dollar would hold its strength. Interest rates would be stable to possibly going up. Again, that would help support the dollar. But that kind of an environment would overall mean stability. It would be stable pricing, stable interest rates. The market likes that, and so the general market should rise because of that. And also, even though I saw interest rates rising, I didn't think they were going to phenomenally go out of control. Inflation seems to be pretty stable, and the reported inflation anyways, again, I'm not going to argue that point, but the reported number seems to be pretty stable. So if interest rates do go up, it does look like they'll at least in the short term go up on a gradual scale. That will help very capital intensive companies that borrow a lot of money because, you know, to cover for their operating expenses and also those kind of companies that pay out dividends. And specifically here, what I'm talking about are like utilities. If you think of a big water or a big electric utility, they're very capital intensive. They have to build dams or they have to build power plants. They got all this big equipment. So that costs a lot of money. So they have to finance that with debt. If interest rates go up really high, that hurts them. That cuts into their bottom line. In parallel with that is these companies tend to pay out a dividend. And so a lot of times you don't buy them to get growth in the stock, but you buy them to get stability and a constant paying dividend. Now, if interest rates don't go up significantly, their costs remain pretty stable and they can keep making their dividend payout. And that dividend payout will encourage people to want to buy that stock in that particular utility because, you know, overall interest rates are still so low. So with utilities, I was looking at moderate operating costs, being able to maintain their dividend, and that dividend still being attractive enough that investors would want to, continue owning their stocks. So big picture, that's kind of what's going on in my mind as I look at things. And so then here are the four areas that I drill down into. And based on what I've already said, you've probably figured out what those four areas are. Well, obviously, one of them was the transportations. I talked about lower fuel costs. So I was going to focus on transportations. I was going to focus on utilities. I was going to focus on consumer products, consumer staples, And within that area, trying to stay more of a mid-cap to small-cap. Because remember, I'm concerned about the multinationals. I'm concerned about the big Procter & Gambles or the Coca-Colas that are trying to have for years been trying to expand and grow overseas. And I see that overseas market shrinking now. I see the U.S. market being pretty stable to growing. So I'm looking for companies that maybe are selling those consumer staples or consumer products here in the U.S. that don't have a lot of exposure to the overseas markets. And then the other area would be just the general market, something that tracks a broad market index like the S&P 500. If you've listened to my prior podcast, you know that I'm a big proponent of most people just staying in the S&P 500, just investing in that. Now, again, I'm not giving recommendations or advice or anything. I'm just saying in general, when you invest in a broad index like the S&P 500, it gives you good exposure. You're in a major index. If the market is going up, your investment will rise and go up with it. And then you spread your risk out over 500 stocks. So that makes sense. So there are my four areas of concentration since the market started to rally after October 15th. And that's the general market, something like the S&P 500, the transportations, consumer staples slash consumer type products, mostly focused in the U.S., and then finally utilities. And then, oh, by the way, I'm still in the U.S. dollar. So really those four or five areas, that's where I'm at. Now, because the market has been a little sketchy, and because we've been way overdue for a major correction, remember this last time around, the S&P barely went down around 10%. That's as big as a drop in almost 3 years. We really haven't seen a good hard correction, which is what we need to get people's thinking back in line, to bring people back into reality. We need a good 15, 20, 25% correction. And those are normal. Those are things that you should be seeing every 2 or 3 years. Well, we haven't been seeing them. So we are overdue, and so I am conscious of that. So although I jumped back into the market and I'm in with both feet, right? I'm full force in. I'm playing the uptrend and I'm in all the way with it. I'm not going to do it foolishly. I'm not going to take any more unnecessary risks than I have to. I'm not going to throw caution to the wind. And so in this particular case, where in past markets, I might have put more of an emphasis on individual stocks. Remember, individual stocks are probably going to give you the likelihood of a higher return, but they also have significantly more risk. And I didn't want to take on that risk. So as I looked at these four or five areas that I'm invested in, rather than going into individual stocks, for the most part, I thought I would minimize my risk, mitigate that risk, and concentrate my money in exchange-traded funds that focused on those areas, as opposed to focusing on individual stocks. So for example, with consumer staples or consumer products, rather than going out and buying an individual stock that focuses on that area, just think of a major company that kind of has a U.S. brand that isn't sold much outside the U.S. And it doesn't have to be a specific brand. It could even be like a retail establishment, a local grocery food chain. I live here in Utah, so the local kind of regional grocery store is called Smith's. Well, Smith's is owned by Kroger's, so you may be familiar with the Kroger name. Well, Kroger pretty much just operates in the United States, and they sell consumer products, staples, right? They're going to sell beer and cigarettes and milk and bread and just things like that, just things that people need every day. The less money that consumers are going to be spending on gasoline, the more money they're going to be spending on those products. But again, I wasn't trying to get extreme. I'm trying to mitigate my risk. So I'm not going to say, oh, I'm going to invest in a company that sells big screen TVs or high ticket items. I'm going to stick with the basics. I'm going to stick with the stuff they're going to sell at Kroger's or, Walgreens or, a company like Tyson Foods, right? They sell chickens primarily in the U.S. I'm focusing on those kind of areas. But remember, I don't want to buy a specific stock. I don't want to take the risk of buying a Walgreens or buying, Tyson Foods, something like that. I'm going to look for an exchange-traded fund that invests in a basket of those stocks, maybe invest in 200 or 300 of those kind of stocks. And I'm going to find an ETF that looks like it has good liquidity, meaning it has a lot of shares traded in a day, so that it's easy for me to get in or get out of that exchange-traded fund when the time comes. So I'm going to look for ETFs that focus on those four areas I talked about. The general market, when that's an easy one. The transportation, and again, there's many exchange-traded funds that focus on variations basically you can talk about there's the Dow Transport, the Dow Transportations. Now, I didn't invest specifically in that. And again, I was looking for more, when possible, I'm looking for more mid-cap stocks and smaller cap stocks because I want to avoid the multinationals. So I definitely didn't invest in the Dow Transports. But again, that's an example of an ETF that would do that. And there are many ETFs. And these transportation stocks, they would include airlines and trains and trucking companies. just everything across the board, you know, rather than going out and specifically investing in Hertz or in Delta or something like that. I wanted to spread my money out and mitigate my risk. So I'm looking for that exchange traded fund that's going to deal in those transportation areas. And then also utilities. And with my focus on utilities, remember, I'm not only looking at stable dividend payers that are going to be able to maintain their costs because interest rates are not going to rise significantly. I'm also going to look at ones that want to take advantage of the lower energy costs, lower oil costs. And in my thinking, and then all utilities obviously use a lot of energy. So this may be a little bit getting down too much in the weeds, but really what I tried to focus on was an exchange traded utility that deals a lot with electric companies, electric, you know, power generation. And these guys that are using either coal or a lot of them have switched over to natural gas. Well, those prices are really coming down. They seem like with lower petroleum costs, they'll probably come down more. And so I thought that would be a favored industry. And so again, to mitigate risk rather than going out and looking at one utility company and putting all my money into one or two utility companies like a Con Edison or something, rather than doing that, I'm looking for an exchange-traded fund, highly liquid, highly focused on electrical generation-type companies. Now, that's my overall plan. And then again, because I am a stock picker, because I am a guy that does like to look at individual stocks, I just can't resist, and I do have to put some of my money, and in this case, a much smaller percentage of my money, into a couple stocks. I like to try and pick some winners. So that's where I've been at for the last 2 weeks, focusing on areas of transportation, utilities, and then mitigating risk, going more into ETFs, exchange-traded funds that are spreading your risk over hundreds or thousands of companies as opposed to just picking one or two individual companies. That's what I hoped you get out of this episode, to just think in those terms. Now remember, we're already 2.5 weeks into this uptrend, into this rally. The things that I'm talking about, I'm not telling you that the time to buy them is now. I'm telling you the time to buy them was 2 weeks ago. Okay, so you don't want to run out and invest in these things that I'm in now. Now, I don't know if this uptrend is going to continue. I don't know if it's going to keep going higher, if we'll see more highs being made, or if it's all going to fall apart. But over these coming weeks and coming days, as I hold these positions, I'll come back and I'll advise you of what's happening in them. I'll give you my thought process, and you can kind of compare that to the type of trading that you're doing. Well, there you have it. For those of you that were interested in what my positions were, how I was playing this uptrend, what my thought process is, I've explained it to you. I hope that made sense. I hope it helps you as you deal with your own investment decisions. And I want to invite you back to our next episode. Now that we're at the end of the week, our next episode will include a market review where we see how the specific market's doing right now and if we're holding onto those key positions and resistance and support levels that we talked about. And then also in our next episode, I want to talk about a special topic, which is avoiding fear and avoiding paranoia. I guess I'm going to call this my boogeyman paranoia episode. I meet so many people that can't make a decision because they're frozen with paralysis of fear. And then I meet another group of people that are quick to react and they make very irrational, knee-jerk decisions, again, based on fear. So in our next episode, we'll talk not only about a market review, but I'll give you some of my thoughts on avoiding that boogeyman paranoia fear. Well, as we close out this episode, I'd like to welcome all of our new listeners. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And until next time, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.